The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Society is lurching back to a start, slowly coming back in sports along with it. But along with sports restart, we'll inevitably get positive coronavirus tests. What happens then? Are players quarantined? Are teams quarantined? Are leagues shut down? If we come back, and if we eventually crown a champion, will there be asterisks next to what happened in 2020? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can answer that question, 888-729-3776. Placing our finger on the jugular of the sports world, we'll take the pulse of the coronavirus pandemic in sports in 2020 in just a moment here on the Will Cain Show. But let's put a ribbon on this conversation about last place in the psychological thrillers genre. Here's my question, fellas. Shutter Island just got last place among the five movies we nominated. That was Shutter Island, Gone Girl, Seven, Silence of the Lambs, and Fight Club. I voted Gone Girl, my nomination, last. Here's my question for you guys. Bubba, Mike A., Nuno, and Pat, who's still hanging out with us. Spoiler alert, I'm going to speak about a recent-ish movie and what happens in the end. I'm going to talk about Gone Girl. Come back in 2 minutes if you do not want to hear this. Fellas, when she takes off and she goes to that camp and she hits herself in the face with a hammer and she starts eating a bunch of candy so she can look pregnant and then she gets her money stolen, why does she go to Doogie's house and kill him? Is that a backup plan? Because what I don't understand is it makes it seem like once her movie money got stolen, that's when she went to Doogie Howser's house and then came stumbling back like he was the one that kidnapped her. And if that wasn't the backup plan, she was going to do that all along, why did she bother with going to that place, that camp, and hitting herself in the face with the hammer and looking pregnant and all that? Why'd she put on that ruse for eventually just to get to Doogie Howser's house? That's what I can't figure out the turn in the movie.
So Doogie wasn't her backup plan. Doogie was her, I don't want to do this, but I have no other choice plan. And the reason she kills him and all that is not because that she was going to do that all along. It's because she decided to go back to Ben Affleck thinking that he's changed and needed some explanation to tie everything that's happened up together. So here's my patsy. Killed Doogie. He was holding me hostage. Back to Ben Affleck.
Okay, so you're telling me she changed her plan when she thought Ben Affleck had changed as a person.
When she saw the interview, yes.
Okay, but what was her original plan then when she was at the camp and she was
eating all the food? She was going to kill herself. She was going to live in the there and enjoy life and live at the camp and eat whatever she wanted, and then she was going to kill herself. She said she was just going to walk into the river with a pocket full of rocks. She even had the little post-its all over the calendar.
That's right. You're right. That's what it was. So she was just going to off herself, but her revenge was getting Ben Affleck in jail. That's what her plan was.
Yes, and that's the part I don't get. What was her motivation? To punish him? Then why go back to him? Like, what's, like, that was the part that didn't mesh for me.
Yeah. I buy your explanation. I've been confused about that. I think my movie deserved last, but Pat, because he's the resident kicking boy, got last again with Shutter Island. Pat, do you want to say anything in your own eulogy?
You guys are all morons except Will.
Thank you, Pat.
I mean, look, all right. He had the second pick, and he took Shutter Island number two. He had so many options on the board.
We left American Psycho.
Terrible category.
He brings it upon himself here.
Terrible category. You guys Pat, made your decision
one,
before
you
even watched the movie. You said last week Shutter Island's last.
Try a non-rock movie.
That's what you get.
Yeah,
right,
did you
Pat,
pick it because an island is technically
actually,
a rock?
That's the lesson he just learned. He's been picking rock movies and Fast and Furious franchise movies, and it's almost, you know, kept him from bottom every time. Now he finally ventured outside of it, and we sting him for it.
Well,
great
guess
job,
who's
guys.
Picking first next week. Can't wait to
you
win.
Haven't noticed he picked the one that takes place on a giant rock?
all right, Pat's picking first next week. We'll find out who's identifying, picking the genre, and who won the movie psychological thriller, if I can speak, genre, a little bit later in the show. That's Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Hey, tune into The Last Dance, a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Chicago Bulls dynasty. The series continues this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. And listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen Jacoby immediately following the broadcast presented by State Farm and AT&T. Available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. If we do end up crowning a champion in 2020, do we treat them as an afterthought? Do we hand them an asterisk? Is it just too outside the norm to consider them a full champion? Hear me out. The UFC put on their event this weekend, headlined by Justin Gaethje and Tony Ferguson. Leading up to that, one UFC fighter tested positive for coronavirus. Subsequently, two members of his camp also tested positive for coronavirus. One fighter, three members of the entire entourage, but the UFC show went on. What will happen in the rest of the sports world? News is coming out of Europe that European soccer is ready to return. The English Premier League looks like it will give a shot at returning on June 1st, and the German Bundesliga looks like it will be returning before that. Right now, it appears, if someone tests positive coronavirus, it won't send the entire team into quarantine. Rather, similar to how the UFC handled it, it will start with just that player, perhaps anybody he's come into contact with, and the show will go on. Add to that some, I think, disappointing news coming out of Major League Baseball, where 5,700 players have been tested for antibodies to the coronavirus, meaning they would have had it and perhaps asymptomatically healed, but retain the antibody to, you would assume, provide them immunity for future infection of coronavirus, although we do not know that that is the case. But shockingly, only 0.7% of baseball players out of the 5,700 tested came back positive for the antibody. So in short, perhaps not as many people are getting it as we think. We've said several times on the Will Cain Show, studies contradict each other on almost a daily basis. Lessons and, I don't know, guidance change on almost a daily basis when it comes to the coronavirus. But right now, it looks like sports leagues will try to move forward quarantining only individual players. Now, let's take a look at a sport coming back and ask, how will they handle it, like the NBA. If the NBA comes back in 2020, if a player tests positive, will we isolate only him? In a season that's shortened, perhaps a playoffs that's shortened, this is extremely different year than anything we've ever experienced in sports. What if the Lakers in the Western Conference Final all of a sudden lose LeBron James to a positive coronavirus test? What if the Clippers all of a sudden lose Kawhi Leonard to a positive coronavirus test? Do we treat that like any other injury? Meaning it's like Kevin Durant going down in the NBA Finals? That's just the breaks? Or do we look back on this year and go, no matter who's crowned as champion, it will always carry with it some level of asterisk? We've had strike-shortened seasons before in almost every sport, and I don't think as you look back on the winners of those final seasons, we say, yeah, but it was a strike year. We don't look back on the Golden State Warriors and the Toronto Raptors last year and say, yeah, but Kevin Durant went out. The Raptors are champion. The champions of all those strike-shortened seasons, well, they're champion. How would we look back at this year? An extremely shortened NBA season. Any other sporting events that are compromised throughout the year, how we treat their champions. Will we look at them in a long list of champions, the almanac, just another entry, and give them full credit? Or will we look at this and put a little asterisk next to it and say, yeah, but that was 2020. Jack in New Jersey, you're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, Will, how's it going? I'm a New Jersey Devils fan, and 95 was our strike short and first title. You know, so I have experience with this. One of the things is that for me, there's no asterisk for Rangers, Islanders, Phillies fans. There's asterisks all across the board. So I think it comes down to a perspective where you fall on. If you win your championship, no asterisk. The fans of your enemies, asterisk.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true, Jack. I appreciate the call. I think for the non-invested fan, neither a hater or a lover, a supporter or a detractant, it's probably not going to be held against them. I would think 2020 will be Those were crazy times, and that was a crazy champion. It may be even the case if it's a shortened season. It may be even the case if it's a shortened playoffs, and it's probably the case even if we lose some superstar to a coronavirus test. Let's just hope we don't lose the seasons themselves. Coming up, one of the coaches of the NBA's dream team, PJ Carlissimo, is going to join me next. We'll talk about The Last Dance and Michael Jordan's mentality. That's next on The Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
The 1992 Olympic Dream Team has been featured heavily in this documentary called The Last Dance on ESPN, featuring Michael Jordan, the last years of the Chicago Bulls dynasty. One of the coaches on that Olympic Dream Team was ESPN NBA analyst PJ Carlissimo, and PJ is now here on The Will Cain Show. What's up, PJ?
Not much, Will. How you doing?
I'm good. So when you're in a situation like the 1992 NBA Dream Team and you're full of stars, and you yourself having coached many stars in your career in the NBA, I think in a way the question I'm about to ask you is a layup, but I yet am still curious. When we're watching a documentary, in a way, we're all led to believe, hey, there's just Michael Jordan and there's everybody else. He's just different. Now, every team and every athlete thinks of himself as the ultimate competitor. When you were in all those years in the NBA and then with the Dream Team, was it that way? Was Michael just different than everybody else you coached and saw and was around?
Yes, because of the competitiveness. And I actually thought the two episodes last night, they kind of delved into that a little bit. You kind of saw the behind the scenes. And it's funny because Kobe certainly had that. I mean, people would say that. You heard that expression an awful lot in the league. He was a tough teammate. Michael was obviously a tough teammate. They I thought they really went into that last night. I've heard that about LeBron. You know, one sense, you couldn't ask for a better teammate because of the way, first of all, they pushed themselves, but the way they pushed their teammates. But you need that because there's a lot of talented players in the NBA. There were a lot of talented players on that Dream Team, but they all had that characteristic. They had great pride. They had great competitiveness, and it came out in drills. I mean, you know, Mike Kay and I at that point, we're the college guys on the staff. This current staff, Pop's staff, is the first time there's only been one college coach. Jay Wright's going to be the college assistant on the staff with Steve Kerr and Lloyd Pierce. So it was always 2-2. I knew about half of the guys well from either coaching against them in college or being on Nike trips with them. So I knew Michael, Patrick, Chris, a bunch of them really well. I hardly knew Larry Bird, John Stockton, Karl Malone at all. And it just jumped out at you, the competitiveness of these guys. And it wasn't really until we got to Monte Carlo and they played against each other. Now, we had drills against each other in San Diego. Portland, we really didn't do anything but play games in the Tournament of the Americas. We were there for like 8 days and I think played 6 games or 7 games. But when we got to Monte Carlo, we didn't have that college all-star group that we had to practice against in San Diego. So when we scrimmaged, it was the first time they scrimmaged against themselves. And like the matchups were ridiculous. I mean, you had David going against Patrick at center, Charles against Karl Malone at four. The wings were like, you know, Chris Mullin, Clyde Drexler, Scottie Pippen. I mean, it was a joke. And then, of course, the point guards, primarily the time we were in Monte Carlo, Irvin was one team and Michael was the other because John Stockton was a little dinged up. He could practice some days. He and Larry Bird had days when they couldn't practice, so they couldn't do a big bulk of the scrimmage work. So we had, that leaves us with 10 guys. So Magic's one team, Michael's the other team. And it really came out in those practices there, and a lot of them have referred, players themselves referred to them as the best basketball, not just of that summer. Some of them said it was the best, like, pickup games, if you will, that they had. It was kind of interesting watching that. I had never seen that before when he was doing Space Jam. They had that group that came, you know, like that gym they built for him or whatever it was, where they had those guys playing against each other. But, you know, great players like to play against other great players, and those scrimmages in Monte Carlo really were great basketball, but you really saw then, that's where Michael, to me, kind of asserted himself a little bit, even against that kind of company. He just said, hey guys, just so we know, you know, let's make sure we all know who the best guy is. And I think it was Michael. And I think that did come out in those scrimmages in Monte Carlo.
P.J. Carlesimo here on the Will Cain Show. One of the things I've always been fascinated about, P.J., is guys like Belichick and Saban and coaches that are hard on their players. I've heard before, that works, but you better be winning. If you're doing that in an environment where you're not winning, then it can really grate and you can lose your team. I would imagine that same thing applies to players. So you can act like Michael Jordan did towards your teammates as long as you are as good as Jordan and you're inspiring the team to wins. Did you ever... And that's a balancing act, I would think, PJ. Who can actually take on that persona, that motivation, that leadership role in that style? Did you have players that you ever came across, college and pros, that attempted to lead in the same way that Michael Jordan did in that kind of, let's be real, bullyish style, but they weren't suited for it?
No, not as strong as Michael, because, you know, you said it, Will, when you started the question, you got to be able to back it up. And, like, Michael made that point a couple times. Now, again, I love Michael, and I've known Michael for feels like 100 years and got to know him really well, even in college, and not just that summer, but Nike coaches trips where we played some golf and played poker and spent a lot of time. He backed it up, and he said himself a number of times last night, my teammates knew, he kind of like said, yeah, some guys felt that way, you know, that I was unfair or tough, too hard on him. But he said they knew I wasn't asking him to do anything I didn't do myself. And I think that's true. So I don't think you get a lot of guys trying to do that. There are some sometimes, but players call, you know, the good thing about players, players call other players on that. If you can back it up, if you are the best guy, if they know you're working harder than anybody else, and what you said, more importantly, you're good enough that you're going to win and deliver, then there's not a problem. That's the challenge coaches have. I think, you know, Michael said he felt he had it. There was a great quote last night. I don't have it exactly, but the price to winning, whatever, however he phrased that, there's a price to winning. He was always willing to pay that price. Bill Parcells was a guy that people used to say that about Parcells. Well, he's too tough on guys. The really good players, the players who want to be successful, they don't mind that at all. As long as you're helping them. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to just, you know, be on guys and be demanding, but you're not helping them to win. That's one of the things too in the NBA, that NBA players call you on that instantly. You can push NBA players and you can be as demanding as you want, as long as you're helping them, as long as you're telling them something that's legit and it's going to help them to win. If you try, and you're not intentionally trying to con them, but you're trying to be hard, but it's not leading anywhere, you're being demanding isn't really helping the team or helping the individual, then it's not going to work. And I think it was that same thing with him. But I don't think there's a lot, I mean, I'm not being smart, there's not a lot of Kobe's or Michael's or LeBron's. There's not a lot of guys who are like that, because they so want to win and they are not going to be accepting at all of teammates who can't come close to replicating that desire.
P.J. Carlesimo, ESPN NBA analyst here on the Will Cain Show. All right, P.J., always love talking to you, man. Thank you for that feedback.
Will, great being with you, man. Enjoy. Take care of yourself.
Okay, you too, P.J. This Last Dance recap on the Will Cain Show is brought to you by AT&T. I ran out of time with PJ because I got to hit a commercial break, but what I would have wanted to ask him one more question about is, have you ever had a player refuse to go into a game at the end? Crunch time, a shot has to be hit. Because what we saw last night is Scottie Pippen did just that. And man, it's hard not to really judge him harshly. That's next on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Will Cain, huge fan. I am unsure how the executive at ESPN let someone who is so unequivocally wrong all of the time host their own show on the air.
You want to be heard? Call the Will Cain Show now. 888-SAY-ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
You just get it here first, guys. I'm telling you. Listen to the Will Cain Show, and you're ahead of the curve. I say, everybody freaks out about, says I'm being contrarian, says I'm being a homer, says I'm being a hot taker. Some time passes, and because the world moves like lemmings and only looks through rearview mirrors, not windshields, they catch up to me.
Can you imagine a modern-day NBA player refusing to go into a playoff game with seconds ticking down and a clutch shot needed? Of course you can. So who are you imagining? Who's in your head? Who would pull a Scottie Pippen? That's coming up on the Will Cain Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'll get to that coming up in just a moment. But let me hit the phone lines and talk to some of the folks like David in Florida. What's up, David? You're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, Will. Hope you're doing great today, being safe, brother.
I am, man. Thank you. I hope the same for you.
I try to catch you guys at least an hour on my way home every day. I listen to ESPN Radio pretty much all the time. And Stephen A. has a clip out there saying, you know, if Dak Prescott was Tony Romo, the Cowboys would have found a way to get the deal done. And my question and looking for your input is, I don't ever remember Tony Romo trying to set the market. I mean, Dak Prescott's not the best quarterback in the league. I mean, he's not bad, but he's not the best. So at what point is that even comparing apples to apples, or is it apples to oranges?
You know, I don't know that Dak Prescott is trying to set the market. I really believe, David, this is what it's about. And I do believe it is the Cowboys who are trying to accomplish something that is a little bit against the grain. Dak wants a 4-year deal. The Cowboys want a 5-year deal. Traditionally, a 5-year deal would be exactly what you want to do. And the Cowboys' method of operating and doing business has always been spread out the cap relief, spread out the cap hit. I think Stephen Jones telling us in the last couple of days that you don't want to pay over a certain percentage of your salary cap to your quarterback reflects the desire to spread that out as far as possible. 5 years gives you more flexibility, but the league has moved to 4-year contracts, and Dak Prescott wants a 4-year contract. He wants to get back to the market sooner rather than later. I truly believe this isn't about numbers. It's not about average annual pay for Dak Prescott. I don't even think it's about guaranteed dollars. I believe this is about, can you negotiate between 4 and 5 years? And honestly, the real test on this negotiation, we'll see who blinks first with July being the drop dead date for a deal to get done. Andre in Massachusetts. What's up, Andre?
Yeah, how you doing, Will? Thanks for taking my call. I think it's going to be Dak who's going to be having some trouble seeing blinking quite a bit, because the Cowboys made it clear bringing in Andy Dalton, they're not blinking. You talked about a game of chicken. Well, Stephen Jones hopped into his Mack truck 17-wheeler, and he's going full steam ahead. Thing about Dak, and I don't necessarily blame Stephen Jones, I'm actually quite impressed with his leadership. I think he's having more of a say. I love McCarthy, and I love them playing hardball with Dak. He hasn't had a real it moment. I look at a guy like Kirk Cousins in terms of what he did when he went down to New Orleans and got that W and asked them, do you like that? For Dak, they don't make the playoffs. They go 8-8. And I don't see something to really put him up. And he's asking for, well, he's trying to push the ball forward for quarterbacks, you know, in terms of getting this big money because Pat Mahomes is coming up. And I don't think it's reasonable. And I kind of side with the Cowboys on this in terms of bringing in Andy Dalton saying, no, we're going to give you maybe Jimmy Garoppolo money, but nowhere near what Patrick Mahomes is going to do.
All right, Andre, I appreciate the call. That's not what's going to happen. It's not Jimmy Garoppolo money. The reports are Cowboys have already offered $33, $34 million a year, $105 million guaranteed. Everybody wants to make this into an issue of whether or not the Cowboys truly believe in Dak Prescott and where does he rank among NFL quarterbacks. It ain't about that. It's about keeping your cap under control as much as possible, and I think it will get done. I asked earlier if we have a playoffs, perhaps a shortened playoffs, if we get to finish the 2020 season, will we look at these champions of the coronavirus year as champions, but with an asterisk? Tyson in Southern California, you're on the Will Cain Show.
Hey, how are you, Will?
I'm good, man. Thank you.
Awesome. So I believe there is no asterisk this year if there's a champion because it did not change the probability of a champion. You're still 1-30. I believe you only get an asterisk if the math has changed. For example, you use a PED, you change the probability of what you were trying to do, so you get an asterisk.
What if, let me ask you two scenarios, Tyson. Number one, what if we come back, let's take the NBA, but we don't come back in full. What if we go straight to the playoffs? If you're eliminated, you're eliminated. If you're in, you're in as of right now. And we start a playoff series. And what if it has to be a different kind of playoffs? Meaning not full seven-game series, but rather some kind of abbreviated, we got to get this done in a defined period of time playoffs. Would that change how you do it?
The only team that really changes it for are the couple teams trying to fight for the playoffs, like Portland, I know, is right on the bubble, or someone else is right on the bubble. I just think you take 16 teams to the playoffs, and you're 1-16. If you have to play a little bit different, a little fewer games, a little different format, you're still 1-16. And I'm a Utah Jazz fan. Did they win the championship? They were still one of the 16 teams, and they were the one that survived.
All right, Tyson, I appreciate the call. I'm going to change it, but I'm going to put this to Ben in Arizona. Okay, Ben, I asked earlier, what if, let's say, the Lakers lose LeBron James, the Clippers lose Kawhi Leonard, deep into a playoff run, thus dramatically changing the outcome of the playoffs? But a guy like David could say, well, everybody went into playoffs with those same risks. The math was still the same. You had the same risk of contracting coronavirus as everybody else. But wait, what if one of the playoffs teams gets totally wiped out by a quarantine? Let's say two do. Let's say the Clippers and the Lakers get gutted by positive coronavirus tests and the Jazz do end up winning it all. Would that not carry an asterisk, Ben?
I think almost you would have to at that point. I'm a Clipper fan. I've been a Clipper fan for 30 years. So this really is painful because this year they were looking really quite good. I think that would be really unfortunate. My suggestion calling in was if they had to shorten it, I think it'd be a lot less of a chance that people would look at it as an asterisk. It is, as long as you had the conference finals and the finals, the seven game series. If they had to shorten every other series to three games, even as short as that would be, as long as you have a seven in the conference finals and a seven in the finals, I think a lot of people would overlook it. Now, as far as a team getting wiped out, that would really be unfortunate. But like the previous caller just said, everybody has those same sort of odds going in. So I think at the end of it all, if part of surviving the playoffs means surviving the virus, then I guess you've earned yourself a championship. As painful as that would be to watch a team, you know, who has a lot of potential not get there because of restrictions on their players, that would really stink.
Thanks for the call, Ben. That's fascinating. So you say, okay, we're going to come back. Everybody runs the same risk of their players contracting coronavirus. So therefore, it becomes like an injury. And if you can survive it, you can survive it. If you can survive an injury, you can survive coronavirus, then you survive to win the NBA championship. But if we shorten series, I do agree. People are going to look at it more side-eyed, more with an asterisk. If it's three-game series, five-game series, deep into the playoffs, the Western Conference, Eastern Conference Finals, and the NBA Finals, I do think you're right. They would always look at this year as different. I do think also if some of the favorites are wiped out by positive tests or governments stepping in and basically keeping some teams from coming back together at full force, we would also look at it with an asterisk. How about if California really stays on lockdown? And the Lakers and the Clippers can't figure out a way to get everybody back to a practice facility, back to hitting on all cylinders, or back to playing games in the way that other teams do. What if either a government or coronavirus takes out your most obvious favorites? And when we left the NBA season, there were three. The Bucks, the Clippers, and the Lakers. What if all of a sudden, as David in Southern California had said, what if the Jazz did win? We wouldn't look at that without an asterisk. Scottie Pippen didn't come off the bench in a playoff series, and I got to tell you, history's looking at him pretty differently this morning, partially because he doubled down in the present tense. In the last dance, he said he'd do it all over again. We'll talk about that next on The Will Cain Show.
Did you know that you can listen to The Will Cain Show on your smart speaker? Just tell it to play ESPN Radio.
Now playing ESPN Radio.
Because you have a monopoly on the truth.
Thank you.
Don't worry. More from Will Cain coming up.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
If you're ever inclined to give Scottie Pippen the benefit of the doubt, he's here to tell you, don't. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. Tune in to Last Dance, a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Chicago Bulls dynasty. The series continues this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. And listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T. Available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. In episode 7 and 8 last night, it was revealed that in a playoff series, when Michael Jordan had gone on hiatus and begun playing baseball, a team featuring Scottie Pippen and Tony Kukoc, the Chicago Bulls were in a final seconds clutch shot game in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And Phil Jackson drew up a play for Tony Kukoc to take the game-winning shot. It's no doubt this was Scottie Pippen's team, but many had said, A, Pippen was more of a facilitator, and B, Kukoc had hit many game-winning shots that year. When Jackson chose to drop a play for Kukoc, Pippen sat down on the bench and refused to come in the game. Jackson went to the end of the bench and said, what's going on? Are you in or are you out? And Pippen said, I'm out. From that moment on, Michael Jordan called the Bulls. Others said he will never live this down. After the game, Bill Cartwright gave a speech. All the Bulls couldn't believe what Scottie Pippen had done. They spoke openly about the fact that he'd quit on them, that he'd placed himself above the team, and Cartwright cried in front of the team and said, we are so disappointed in you, we cannot believe this is what you've done. Stephen A. Smith on First Take this morning says, Pippen does not look good even today.
Scottie Pippen looks very, very bad in this docuseries overall. This is an all-time 50 great player. As far as I'm concerned, one of the top three defenders in the history of basketball, a six-time champion, a good dude, the whole bit. But those three things, the migraine, the contract dispute, and then not checking into a game, all of those things are the things that resonate about Scottie Pippen. And I don't think he looks good with this docuseries at all.
No, he does not. And he doubled down. In present-day interviews in the documentary, Scottie Pippen was asked about that moment of not coming back into the game. And he said, you know what? I'd probably do it again the same way today. That's a shocking thing to say in 2020. All of his teammates had his back to some degree. Steve Kerr said it wasn't in Scottie's character. That's what made it so disappointing. So they isolated the moment and separated it from the man. But here's the man in 2020 saying, I'd do it again. And it becomes difficult to give Scottie Pippen the benefit of the doubt. How about this? We've asked several times, Michael Jordan, great competitor, great leader, greatest player of all time, great teammate? The answer is probably yes. I think all of his teammates would say yes. John Sally has said yes to me. They all say he was a tough guy to be around. But Scottie Pippen, good teammate? At some point, I don't even know if it'd matter what they would say. Because you add up the things that Stephen A. just mentioned. There was the time he had the migraine and didn't play up to the level that was expected of him. You can blow that off. Hey, look, people get migraines. Michael Jordan looked skeptical in the documentary about whether or not it was a migraine, a headache, or an excuse, but you can give him the benefit of the doubt, you would think, in a silo. Then there's the contract dispute in 97, the one that Jordan said that Pippen was selfish about, where he chose to have his surgery during the season instead of during the summer because he wasn't going to, quote, ruin his summer. That wasn't the quote. F up his summer. That was the quote. And then you add on top of this, this moment of not checking into a game in the playoffs. And you have to say at some point, man, the actions speak a lot louder than the words. It's hard to give Scottie Pippen the benefit of the doubt on whether or not he was a good teammate. And when you double down, I don't know if that's out of obstinance, I don't know if that's out of defiance, but when you double down in present day without admitting your mistake, which is quite honestly an obvious mistake, I don't think there's an other side to that equation, it's hard to give Scottie Pippen the benefit of the doubt on whether or not he was a good teammate. Can you imagine a modern-day NBA player declining to check into a game? Yes, of course you can. When he doesn't get the game-winning shot called for him, you can imagine modern-day players doing that. But who do you picture in your head? Eric in Tennessee, when you do it, who's in your head?
Good afternoon, Will Kane. My head is James Harden. He has it written all over him. I could just see him refusing to go in a game, especially if it's the play's drawn up for like a Westbrook or something like that. He's not going in. Another thing about Gone Girl, before you kick me off, the biggest plot hole is that at one point she drives to meet Neil Patrick Harris in her car. They're going to find her car and prove that, you know, she wasn't kidnapped or whatever. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. I remember Eric.
It's the car
Eric
she bought with cash.
A week ago. She bought it with cash, Mike. I don't know.
Out of plot hole.
There is still a random
car in front of NPH's house. 1 minute,
right? Well, she met him at the casino. Am I the only one who did the homework?
Well, you read the book.
MPH has this unbelievable lake house. Why is there the worst car ever sitting out? Where they should get the car from?
Why do y'all keep saying NPH? Well, it's Doogie Howser was the guy.
NPH would never do that.
This is Doogie Howser. You guys keep confusing me. All right, let's be clear. When you think of a modern-day player declining to check in because the game-winning shot wasn't called for him, you know who you picture. Come on. It's Kyrie.
Thank you for listening to the Will Kane Podcast. You can listen to the Will Kane Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Kane Podcast.